However, the hallowed halls of Stoke-upon-Trent Sixth Form College were never to beckon him further. As he recalls,
"The combination of my devilish charms, my rapier wit, my love of music, all pointed me in the same direction. I decided, there and then, that I would spend my life as a star musician, sailing the high seas of Chianti, rocking and rolling around the world. I was a genie unleashed. Wit, charm, confidence, charisma became the weapons of my armory, and I was unstoppable. To seal the deal, I began making negotiations with the big man below, if you get my drift. I knew I had what it takes to rule the airways, but it certainly doesn't hurt getting a little lift up from Beelzebub. So we came to an arrangement."
To mark that an agreement had been undertaken, Murdoch changed his middle name via Deedpol from Alphonse to Faust. And in return, Murdoch took charge of Satan's own bass guitar, El Diablo.
"Great sound, really twangy,"
Murdoch says, explaining its unique appeal. The contract between the two obviously bounced between lawyers for some length, because although the path ahead was now clear, it would be some time before Murdoch Nichols drank from the cup of success. Murdoch went through a variety of low-paid jobs in order to pay the rent required to stay in his father's home. Gravedigger, soup seller, telesales, part-time Christmas Santa, even stealing the lead off church roofs. Admittedly, not actually a job, but all the same, he needed the money. "How desperate did he get?"
"Well,"
he says,
"I did think about giving Sir Alan Sugar a good vigorous tromboning one time. I think £100 was the agreed sum. But at the last minute I thought, oh, fuck it, I'm better than that. He was just called Alan at the time. He still made me call him Sir, though." "That story's totally true,"
he maintains. Throughout these years, Murdoch formed many bands with various lineups, none of which seemed to go anywhere. Among these was the terribly amateurish new romantic band Patchouli Clark, a sad, pointless mixture of vaguely gothic keyboards and Murdoch's strangled crow-like crooning. They were never signed.
"Yeah, whatever,"
he says now.
"I always knew I was going to be king of the world at some point, but, you know, it didn't happen with my first band. Big deal."
Years upon years passed of unsuccessful attempts to crack stardom. Kiss and Makeup, Bullworker, Crimson Backdraft, Motley Dude, The Stupid Name Gang, Durango 95, Two's a Crowd. The list of shame goes on. Murdoch explains,
"Eventually I knew I was wasting my time casting pearls before swine. You know, my voice is for the true connoisseur, the specialists. And I came to see if I was going to communicate the true brilliance of my songwriting skills to the wide audience that they deserved. And I was going to have to find someone with a more conventional vocal talent. The fact of the matter is that in 1997 the charts were a joke. You know, these people wouldn't know decent music if it came up and smashed them around the chops. I had a plan that had turned not only the top 40, not just England, not just the music industry, but the whole entire world on its head. Everything."
If Murdoch was ever to really realize his dream and escape the dirty, filthy, rotting, garbage-filled, putrid cesspit of Stoke-on-Trent, he was going to have to take his master plan to another level. This meant recruiting a band worthy of his talents. Meanwhile, in another part of England, Crawley, Newtown, a much, much better singer was taking shape.